This is Dubai Eye 103.8.
The Clinic. Free advice right here.
On Dubai Eye 103.8.
Okay, so if you want your free advice, you've come to the right place. Dr. Ava Ghassemi is a clinical psychologist. She works at the Mapletree Centre in Dubai. So first of all, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Really nice to have you here. Just tell us a little bit about your background. You're a psychologist, Dr. Ava. So tell us about where you've worked, how long you've been in Dubai for.
I've been in Dubai since 2014 and I've been with the Mapletree Centre since. I've worked in the US and Canada prior to that, and I work with people from different backgrounds, and obviously being in Dubai, it's one of the most diverse places in the world, so I get to work with people with all sorts of cultural and familial backgrounds. So
I guess, yeah, we're all from different parts of the world, and that can also form quite a lot of the that can form quite a lot in terms of our character. When someone comes to you with a problem, cultural differences can be, quite important, significant.
Yes, absolutely.
So it's been different to where else you've worked in the world, I guess.
In Toronto, it's also one of the most multicultural places in the world. But here we have the added layer of the expat life. And families.
Distant from their families.
Exactly.
Kind of thing.
Families being apart, and there's a lot of loneliness.
Okay, so we're going to talk about some of the big issues and the smaller issues too. So some of the conflicts that can arise in general when you live with someone. And we've been sort of getting a bit of a straw poll around the office about what people mentioned as annoying habits. And you would be amazed at how many people said the wet towels on the floor. Like, honestly, nearly everybody said that. Funnily enough, it was mainly women, but it was like a real, real big thing, wasn't it, Krisha?
Ridiculous. I was sort of just saying to everybody, oh, great, we've got a psychologist coming on, what would tell us about this? And every time it happened, I would be like, yeah, I've already got that one. Oh, really, your husband does that? Yeah, so does everybody else. What? Maybe you can tell us, what is it about men that they can't pick things up?
I have to be very careful not to make generalizations. I think, speaking of culture again, that plays a big role. And depending on, every family comes with a culture. It doesn't mean being from a particular place in the world, but within your family, what's been acceptable, what do you get away with, what are the rules in the house. We bring all those things into our marriage and into our relationships. So every marriage is a multicultural marriage in a way.
Interesting. Mm.
So I'm going to just give a little sample of a typical kind of example of kind of an argument that could take place in a marriage. And because we don't want to make sweeping generalizations, we've gone for a cartoon couple instead. So this is Homer and Marge Simpson having a bit of a disagreement, shall we say.
Okay, the trampoline was a bad idea. But you know what? At least I'm out there trying new things. If it were up to you, all we'd ever do is work and go to church.
That's not true.
Name one thing you've done in the past month that was fun.
I can name 10 things. I made Sloppy Joes.
That's not fun.
So, I mean, like, we're laughing, but actually that's not a million miles away from what someone once says. So one partner says, I've gone out and done something. The other partner says, well, it wasn't right, or you did it wrong. And they say, well, at least I tried. At least I'm trying to do something. And, you know, that age old argument, we're just not having fun. You're not being fun. You're not. So, I mean, if Homer and Marge came to Mapletree Centre and said, look, we're having problems. I think Homer's saying, I think Marge is really boring. If it was up to her, all we'd ever do is go to work and go to church. And Marge is like, I do fun stuff. I made a pizza the other day. What kind of advice would you be giving the Simpsons? I know this is quite existential. What kind of advice would you be giving the Simpsons? But that's quite a realistic scenario to the kind of problems and issues people have.
Do I have them in the office together or what, just one of them?
Yeah, they're together. Yeah.
Together.
Yeah,
okay.
They're together.
Okay.
But let's go with together first, and then I want to hear what the difference would be if they were separate.
I'll tell you, when I have people together, I get to, get much more in depth about what the issue is, because when you only have one side of the story, it's easy to get very critical of the other partner and make it all about that one person that's in front of us. If we have both people, then we make space for both people to talk and to talk about their differences and where these differences may be originating. I think if someone came to me with the issue of my partner is being boring and we're not having fun together, the first thing I would ask would be, when was the last time you did have fun together? And usually people are able to think of it when they really try a bit harder. In the midst of an argument, we get really caught up in criticizing or talking about all the flaws and imperfections of each other. But if we pause, if we have a little bit of a moment to reflect, then we can think of a time. And then I would want to know what's changed since then. What's changed in your lives since then? Have there been kids? Have there been migrations? Have there been losses? Have there been financial changes? And all of these have a lot of meaning, and they carry a lot of meaning. So something that seems a bit trivial or really small on the surface might actually have a lot more behind it. And that would be the hope in therapy, to be able to uncover some of these things.
And that's the problem, the small thing. You know, there's a small crack, and then the crack gets bigger, 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 and bigger. So we were sort of saying, one of the things that came up quite a lot in our office was people saying, oh, why do men leave towels on the floor, particularly wet ones? Rob's texting the grumpy old man, obviously, and he says, what is it about wives that makes them get all annoyed about towels on the floor? Which is a fair point. Like, I think that's absolutely fair. If one person's coming and saying, this really drives me insane, and then the other person is coming and saying, is it really that bad? You know, I guess that's quite a difficult situation.
The disagreement here is what people get stuck on. And we also are very, we live in a hashtag, you know, let's be happy world, where we have simple solutions, you know, the top 10 reasons and the top 10 tips kind of world. So we get really caught up in trying to find a solution to things that sometimes just need to be accepted as they are. And I'm not saying all the women or all the men need to accept everything about their partner. But just focusing on what made you choose this person in the first place. Try and remember those things. What got you together in the first place?
I mean, is the lesson there that one of you stops picking, one of you picks up the towel after the other person and just doesn't mention it? Or is it that the person should stop dropping the towel on the floor?
I mean, we all know what it is, right?
I mean, we know what it is. We're just, you know, trying to be nice. Okay, let me add to that little element of the conversation. Our boss has two boys and a dog, and you know, she also made similar comments. I don't know if it was towels, but it was stuff. And she said it just over time. Though the thing is, it's like if you can't beat them, join them. It kind of ends. So. You know, either you're forcing someone to come up to your standards, or you're saying, let's live happily in this standard. And I think that's exactly what you're saying. Is the real issue about the towels? Does it really bother you that much that you have to pick the towels up? Or is it that you just accept that you're a family that leaves towels on the floor now? You know, that's what our family does. And that's our family culture. And we've got quite a few people texting in about this already. Aidan's messaged in on 4001 and says, my wife has a clicky jaw. I'm sorry, I'm not laughing, Aidan. Well, I kind of am. My wife has a clicky jaw, and every time I hear it, it sends me over the edge. I keep telling her to get treatment, but so far she's done nothing about it. How can I stop getting so annoyed with her about this?
Aidan, you don't need to love everything about your wife. It's okay that you can't stand the clicky jaw. You know, and I think the other, again, element is that we want things to stop. We want our own annoyances to stop. We want our own unpleasant feelings to stop. And we want our partner to stop doing things that make us feel that way. And sometimes the answers, you know, the short answer to this would be, don't get so caught up in trying to stop things. If there really is a solution to this, if there is some kind of surgery that can resolve this. I'm a snorer, and my husband has definitely, you know, asked me, can you look into that? Could there be a So, you know, it is worth considering if there is, you know, something medical about it that's worth looking at.
And did you look at it?
I have, but I haven't reached at that stage in my life yet where I'm ready to go through under the knife.
He's just going to have to learn to love every part of you.
And I'm really glad you mentioned that because that's another myth we have. You know, if we talk about, you know, myths and fairy tales, we expect that we need to love everything about our partner, and every little thing should be cute and sweet, and like the days when we first are, you know, dating, and some of the really small things are really trivial and not a big deal. But it's okay not to love everything about our partners.
The Clinic, free advice right here
on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Okay, so our guest today is Dr. Abe Ghassimi, who's a clinical psychologist at the Mapletree Centre. And we've had a few questions. The most recent one was about Aidan, whose wife has a clicky jaw. Obviously, there are huge issues in terms of infidelity, money, substance abuse. All those big things can break up marriages. But sometimes it's the small things, the small annoying habits that can grow and grow. Anne says, my husband seems incapable of picking his dirty clothes up from the floor and putting them in the laundry basket. It's driving me mental, and I feel like the next time he does it, I will throw his clothes in the bin. How can I get them to pick them up? Are you sure this isn't you, Krisha? Are you sure you're not Anne?
It could very well be me. And you and I, we have the same issue. Please, Dr. Ava, tell us what we can do before we both get divorced.
I have more questions than answers in this kind of scenario, but I think I'm hoping that it would reflect on the complexity of relationships rather than focusing on just one area as something that could break our marriage or make our marriage. You know, the question I would have here, first of all, when you say mental, it drives me mental, what are the feelings? What are the emotions associated with it? Is it anger? Is it sadness? Is it feeling disrespected? And also, is there any other areas in the relationship that drive you, quote unquote, mental?
Okay, so Marla is saying, Marla's question is a little bit similar to Aidan's. Marla says, my partner clears his throat and sinuses out in a very loud manner every morning. I find it absolutely disgusting. And even though I've told him I don't like it, he still does it. How can I get him to stop?
I focus on emotions here a lot, as you noticed in the previous question. And here for Marla, it's disgust. And disgust is a pretty strong one.
Strong, yeah.
It's a distancing type of emotion. It sometimes comes with the behavior of shaming our partner. You know, the throat and the noises, is that a new thing or was that there for a while? And, you know, again, going back to if there's any medical issues, let's look into that. But if it isn't, and if it's more of an annoyance for you, the one thing I would say here is we have to own some of our annoyances as our own stuff.
Yeah.
Rather than thinking that if I had a magic wand and I fixed my partner and if these are the things that I could fix about them, then that would make me happy. We put so much emphasis on the behaviors of the other person in the relationship. And unfortunately, then that takes away from insight and awareness into where some of those annoyances are coming from. What's the meaning when your partner is making that noise and you've confronted them and nothing changes? It means they don't care about what you think. Does it mean that you have no desire to be around them? Does it mean that you're giving up on them? Does it mean that they're just, you know, careless or thoughtless? We gotta look into it a little bit more to see what does it all mean.
The Clinic, free advice right here
on Dubai Eye 103.8.
So we have a doctor in the house. It's always nice to say that. Psychologist Dr. Ava Gissimi is here, and lots of you are getting in touch. And we're sort of making light of it a little bit and calling them pet peeves. But in all seriousness, some of these small things can end up being quite big. Just an example, someone else has texted in and said, my kids don't know how to use their laundry basket. They always put their dirty clothes on top of the laundry basket rather than putting them inside. I have to make sarcastic comments and show them how to open the laundry basket and put their clothes inside. I'll tell you something that my parents did, or my mother did. It was, okay, yeah, if you don't put your clothes in the laundry basket, I'm going to put the clothes at the top of the stairs. And if they're not put away, they're just going to get thrown away. Mm-hmm. So that was quite an incentive. So any of your mess, whether it was like our shoes, whether it was toys, if it's there, if it's at the bottom of the stairs or the top of the stairs, by the end of the day, it's going in the bin or mm-hmm. being given away. And trust me, that was enough to frighten me and to get into the habit of doing it. And now, yeah, sometimes I'm an adult now and sometimes I won't do things if I'm in a hurry. But generally speaking, I feel so much happier when I've put my things where they belong. So it obviously stuck with me.
Sometimes radical things, radical solutions do make a difference. But I would just one small comment about sarcasm. I think as psychologists, we most of us have a big sensitivity around sarcasm and being careful about that. I'm not shaming moms who are sarcastic. I get it. I'm a mom too. And I'm sure I've been sarcastic many, many times. But it's just something to be mindful of, that sarcasm usually doesn't work. It just goes in one ear and comes right out the other ear.
Okay, so before the break, we were sort of discussing the fact that sometimes being so annoyed by someone's behaviour can be a symptom of things. And Khalil's been in touch and says, my wife is too regimented and everything has to be her way. There's no give and take and it's really starting to wear me down. Is there anything I can do to maybe get her to lighten up?
Asking yourself, what do I need in order to feel okay about this regimented lifestyle? You know, again, putting the question back onto yourself and also maybe trying to understand a little bit where the need for that structure is coming from. Maybe there's a really good purpose to it. Maybe there's a good reason for it. Yeah. And empathy can go a long way in these kinds of circumstances when we really understand the underlying reasons why certain behaviors exist in the first place. You know, was there trauma in the wife's life? Was there a need for control because there was a lot of unpredictability and chaos when she grew up? Or, you know, trying to get to know her beyond just the surface of the behavior and having a bit of empathy for her.
Maria's been in touch and says, my husband is incredibly indecisive and always leaves everything to me. I'm tired of being the one who has to make all the decisions. It's wearing me down.
What I hear in this question and statement is I can't rely on him. And I feel alone in this. I feel alone in making decisions. And again, what are the consequences of that? Does that mean that you feel more anxious because you have to make all these decisions and that you feel overwhelmed? And what is it about your husband that makes him feel so indecisive? Where does that come from? Is there an issue around anxiety or feeling easily conflicted about making the right decision? Is there an issue around perfectionism? And just trying to, again, understand where is the source. I keep going back to that. What is the purpose? What is the underlying reason for that?
And can it be the case that some people perhaps, you know, they've got very high-pressured senior jobs at work and they're constantly making decisions all day. So maybe sometimes when they come home from work, the last thing they want to be doing is making more decisions.
I always talk about parts with clients. You have a part of you that can be very, you know, decisive and strong and in charge and in control. And then there's another part of you that just needs to, you know, let loose and feels maybe even insecure. And we have to understand these parts. And why is it that at work that part is present, what helps it, and why is it at home that part is not there? And is there a benefit to having these different parts?
And would you, I mean, I'm genuinely interested in this because I think that possibly is my husband. I think he's like, I'm on work all
day. I really hope Stuart's not listening.
Okay. Better be working. You know, and he gets home and I think he does sort of think, okay, that's it. I've dumped that at the door. I can relax now. But what about my time to relax? And I'm interested in what you said about that because I would like to know, I'm going to have to ask you when I get home, why do you feel that you can just... And I almost think it's absenting yourself, no? I mean, he wouldn't do that in a meeting with his boss, so why does he do it with me?
One of my favorite relationship gurus, Esther Perel, I'm sure you've heard of her at some point, but she usually talks about how we need to bring forth into our relationship, not the leftovers at the end of the day, but kind of our best version. And if that's really difficult to do, why is that? We do live in a world where working overtime, staying longer than our bosses is valued. And these are things that we all bring into our relationship and we bring it home. And I would say it's not just a personal relationship issue, it's also a systemic problem that we're facing, and recognizing that impact on our relationships is important, and having a bit of empathy for that.
True. People do work long hours and it's a long drive sometimes.
Yeah. Tony's texted in and says, if you do just about anything long enough, you'll form a habit that will control you. So we better choose our habits well. Tony goes on to say, it takes about 18 months to break a bad habit like smoking. But there's usually a pattern at work that takes place starting with a cue, then a routine is formed and a reward derived. Forming good habits like exercise works in a similar way. Tony says he's enjoying the discussion. Would you agree with that? I guess if we start to try and get into good habits and they form, we're less likely to fall into some of these negative patterns.
I think, yeah, what we're talking about here are behavioral interventions and a reward system. I find that they work sometimes with certain people. Unfortunately, the discipline or even the mental capacity might not be there to go through such a strict regimen to get ourselves to that place where something becomes a permanent. We are very malleable, but we're equally stubborn.
Very diplomatically put.
The Clinic. Free advice right here.
On Dubai Eye 103.8.
It's just coming up to 10 to 5. We have psychologist Dr. Ava Ghassemi in the studio live with us now. She is at the Mapletree Centre in Dubai if you're looking for her. We have had quite a few questions in. This one's anonymous and we just got it a few minutes ago. It says, I'm in the habit of biting my nails, which drives my wife crazy. How can I get rid of this habit? So this is someone, lots of these messages that we've had in so far, Ava, have been like, my partner does X, Y, or Z. This person's taking a bit of responsibility saying, mm-hmm. I have this habit that my partner doesn't like. Mm-hmm. How can I get rid of it? So what would your advice be to this anonymous man who is driving his poor wife crazy?
I would share that this is something that he's trying to work on and solicit her help along the way as well.
People love to feel like they're helping, don't they?
Some do, some don't. But I think in this kind of relationship where he wants to go that extra step, it might be worth a conversation and see how she can help him. If it's stress related, anxiety related, there are treatments available for nail biting. You mentioned something that you used as a child.
So I have quite long and fairly nice nails now. Wasn't always the case. When I was younger, I used to bite my nails. This was when I was at primary school, so I must have been 8 or 9. And my parents were like, oh, don't bite your nails, it's disgusting. That didn't work. if you don't bite your nails, you'll get extra pocket money. That didn't work. And I remember two friends of the family, Ken and Kate, and Kate was just like a friend, my dad, my stepmom. She's so glamorous, just, you know, amazing woman. And she had these beautiful nails. And I always used to say, I love your nails. Even at that young age, I was such a tomboy, but her nails I always thought were beautiful. And she said, well, you can have nails like this if you don't bite them. And I was like, I'm not sure I believe her. So anyway, I think she went out and got me this stuff or encouraged my parents to get me the Stop and Grow. And it was kind of like a nail polish thing that you put on your nails. And if you put your nails in your mouth, not even if you bit them, just if they went near your mouth, it was so bitter and such a horrible taste. So whoever was the mystery texter, I would recommend that. It really tastes horrible. And so I used that and I stopped biting my nails. And I think one of the other carrots, my parents definitely went with the stick approach, but Kate had used the carrot and she said, look, you can have like a French polish when you grow your nails nice and long. And to this day, what are my nails like, Dr. Ava? What have I got?
Very nicely polished French manicure.
So it stayed with me for like almost 30 years. And I never have anything different on my nails other than that. So big thanks to Kate, because really ultimately it's thanks to her that my nails look like this. So try it. Try the Stop and Grow and let us know if it works. A couple more questions that have come in for you. We have loads more to get through. We'll see what we can do. We have Carlo who says, my wife constantly moans that she's tired. I help out around the house as much as I can and we both work full time. I don't think she has it any harder than me. FYI, we don't have kids and I'm fed up of her moaning. So, you know, basically, he's saying we have a share of domestic duties at home. There aren't any children and we both work full time. So in terms of the balance in their marriage, it seems to be quite similar.
And what I would wonder about is when, Carlo, your wife moans a lot, do you feel that there is no space for you to express yourself? And sometimes that's where the annoyance is coming from. That when someone is quote unquote nagging or moaning or taking a lot of space in a way, a lot of emotional space to vent, and it doesn't change anything, it doesn't make a difference in terms of their wellness and their happiness in the relationship, then is it a question of perhaps she would benefit from talking to others, talking to a therapist, and making some room for him to express himself as well. And, you know, I think that imbalance can put a lot of burden on a relationship.
Okay. Somebody else has said, my partner's a really picky eater and will only eat about five things. It makes going out for dinner really tough. What can I do?
Well, I saw this question and the last part of the question was, you know, would I break up with them or would I stay with them? And
see, I thought that was so extreme. I wasn't even going to read it.
Sorry, I broke protocol.
No, it's fine. It's just so extreme. Like, I'm going to break up if you don't like the food. Though, I mean, my advice, I'm not a psychologist, but seriously, just break up with them. Because if you're thinking that the food is bad enough, you know, if it's that much of an issue, then find someone else, right?
And you know, I would say we need to be more tolerant and aware.
So don't listen to me.
Aware of the complexity of relationships. Again, you know, we can't have the fairy tale partner that matches us in everything, that meets all our needs and desires, and unless you know, cooking is incredibly important and it's something that you do every day and dining out is part of your work and life and everything you do every day, there must be other things and other commonalities that can compensate for this one thing. And I think, again, looking back at what attracted you to this partner in the first place and why were you with them in the first place is an important question to go back to. And if you can't find an answer, then perhaps leaving might be an answer.
Okay, that's all we've got time for. Sorry to everyone else that messaged that we didn't get a chance to answer. Our big thanks go to our guest for this hour, psychologist Dr. Ava Ghassemi, a clinical psychologist at Mapletree Centre in Dubai. Thank you so much
for
coming on.
Thank you for having me. This was fun.
This is Dubai Eye 103.8.